content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors. Great companies like Sun Warrior, the pioneers of plant-based protein. From the sun to the plant to you, go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all the products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Enviromedica, makers of Terraflora, a novel broad-spectrum symbiotic combining spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Find Terraflora and the full line of products at enviromedica.com. Ned CBD. Keep it simple, keep it natural with Ned CBD. And good news, animal lovers, Ned's full-spectrum hemp oil is not just for humans, it's great for humans' best friend. That's right, it's not just for you, it's for your canine or feline as well. Explore Ned's line of full-spectrum hemp products at HelloNed.com and use the code OLR at checkout for 15% off. Paleo Magazine, now all digital. Go to PaleoMagazine.com to subscribe. The Well-Being Journal, Veg World Magazine, the International Society of Sports Nutrition, and Thorne Research. Visit our dispensary at OneLifeRadio.com for 20% off and free shipping. You can find more information on all of our sponsors, including links to listener discounts, on the OneLifeRadio.com sponsor page. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
Higher, baby. You're in the right place. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. How you doing today, Ronaldo?
I'm doing great, remaining positive in a negative world. But yes, other than that,
absolutely,
I'm doing awesome.
Well, that's the only thing we can do, right? That's what we need to do. We all need to do it. And, you know, yeah, I'm excited about today's show. I'll tell you a funny story. So I was looking around for some, I don't even remember what it was, in my house, and I ran across this old Self magazine, okay? And this is where I'm going to bring Tina Burnett in. She is my trainer, my dear friend, and she is amazing. She's one of the top trainers in the world. And I brought it over to my workout yesterday, and she and I perused through it. I think that's the correct word. And we were laughing about it so hard. I can't even tell you. There's even cigarette ads in this issue from January of 1990. Tina, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Bernadette. How do you feel from your workout? Any soreness?
Well, you know, no, not at all. You know, not at all. I didn't. And I just got off the spin bike. I didn't get my 20 minutes in because I was farting around, you know, chit-chatting with a friend of mine. And so, but I got 10 minutes in, which is better than nothing, right?
That's right. But you never sit on the couch.
No, I don't. I exercise all day. Yeah, I know I do. Seriously, I got up at 6, or I should say the dogs got me up at 6:46 this morning, because once they start, they don't stop. And then it was just one project to the next. But, you know, I'm that girl, you know. I like little farting around at the house. I like doing my own cleaning and changing things up and getting my hands dirty. That's just who I am. I always have been. I mean, I was the tomboy in the neighborhood in my prettiest dress, riding my bike.
You're a workhorse, girl. You've always been a workhorse. And that's something to be proud of, as long as you don't wear yourself out too much.
Maybe it's an addiction. I think it might be an addiction. I'd run away from myself as fast as I can, like in the words of Jackson Brown. Can't think of the song that he says that in, but it's always great to have you on the show with us. It is. And for maybe you now out there listening that have joined us for the first time, Tina Burnett has a bachelor's of kinesiology. She is certified in strength and conditioning. She's actually a specialist in that field. She is certified in biomechanics, and she is part of the Aerobics and Fitness Association of America. Every time I say that title of that association, I just want to put my hands up, you know, and dance. But Tina has been in the fitness industry for over 30 years, teaching cardiovascular classes at several of Dallas's top studios and health clubs, as well as instructing and developing resistance training programs for individuals and groups in the gym and in her home and my home. So, and lots of people's homes. She has been named top female trainer in DFW by the Personal Trainers Hall of Fame. And you can contact her at TB Fitness Pro tbfitnesspro@gmail.com. That's tbfitnesspro@gmail.com. As I said, today we're talking about Self Magazine, a copy that I found in my house from January of 1990, if you can believe that. And so today we're just kind of talking about then and now, workouts versus now going back to the 1990s. And so there's a lot of similarities and a lot of differences, aren't there, Tina?
Yeah, there really are. And yeah, just reading the articles that we found in that magazine. It's interesting because one of the articles that has a few different fitness professionals and PhDs who are, professors of like physiology or physical education or exercise, sports and science. You know, there's all these kind of varying opinions back then. But even though it was, 20 years ago or no, 10 years ago, what year is it? Good grief. It's how many years ago was that?
It's 2020.
So, 30 years ago. So I started in the industry in 1985. I'm aging myself, but I don't care. When I was a senior in high school,
me too, Tina.
Teaching aerobics.
Me too.
Teaching aerobics.
When I started my serious. Yeah, you and I started our careers at the same time. So it's all good, right?
Yeah. So, 5 years after I started is when this article came out, the one about... Are we becoming a nation of couchpotatoes or marathoners? Is kindler, gentler exercise really the next wave? It's funny because back then it was all really so much about aerobics and aerobic training, and everybody was running and taking aerobic classes. And, strength training was around, but it wasn't as popular with, mainstream until, kind of the early to mid-90s, I'll say, as far as just people and fitness. It was all about, I taught all the step classes, and my classes were all pretty high intensity, just pounding our bodies away. But it's interesting because this article, there's a woman named Toni Beck, who I remember her. She was the founding director of the spa, the Crescent. And, her whole opinion is, that fitness is just movement, period. And that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a few other people that are kind of, like a PhD that's saying, it is about movement, but it's also about measuring, we need to think of the measurements that can be made on the body, like muscular strength and endurance, aerobic power, anaerobic power, and that fitness is a physiological characteristic that can be measured. And it is. So it's kind of like you're getting all these differing opinions. They're not really arguing with each other, but, when you talk to a PhD and you talk to someone just like a director of a spa, you're going to get a lot of difference. She's more about just being moving and smooth, and you don't need to work out intensely to get results.
I found the article really remarkable of all the similarities and how brilliant these doctors were that were talking about this 30 years ago.
Exactly.
It's astounding, actually.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing because there's some of their opinions are very similar to what the opinions are today. I think just back then, the focus, like when they tested people on their fitness, it was focused on VO2 max, which is your oxygen uptake. So, they put you on a bike or a treadmill, and they still do that's like the stress test. But they didn't really measure, like if you go to a health club to see how fit you are, they didn't really measure your strength, muscular strength,
right.
Power and all that, which they do that more now because it's become, with CrossFit and all the, kettlebell training and all the stuff that has been so popular now, more about short duration, high intensity, whereas back then it was more about long duration, moderate intensity. And remember, I mentioned to you yesterday, Bernadette, that back in those days, I was running, I was doing marathons, I was teaching aerobic classes. I didn't start lifting weights till about, I started lifting weights in 88, 89, but I was still just doing all this long distance stuff. And when I got out of college and was teaching all these classes, I was at the heaviest weight I've ever been at. And I was actually about 15 pounds heavier than I am now because we were doing all this cardio, and it was back when it was low fat, high carb.
Back when people used to weigh themselves all the time. I actually didn't start lifting weights till about 12 years ago, and it was remarkable how my body transformed, and it never looked better, even to this day. Lifting weights is something that everyone needs to do, I feel. especially as they get older. But the thing about this article that I found really fascinating is how futuristic it was. For example, Dorothy Harris, PhD, professor of exercise and sports science at Penn State University at University Park. This is a quote from her. Women have always relied on evaluation from others. We need internal standards of how we look and or feel and look. I love that. And I also thought that this was very futuristic. Peter Francis, PhD, associate professor, professor of physical education, San Diego State University. And he says this, if we make neighborhoods safe and pleasant rather than asphalt jungles, people will exercise. I thought both of those comments were, as I said, very futuristic, very visionary.
Yes. Oh, I totally agree. And I mean, there wasn't really anything in this article that I really disagree other than, you know, that, you know, it really comes down to balance. You know, I wrote that. I just put it all, it's all about balance because, you know, the idea, I think what they're trying to talk about is just getting people, how do you get people to get motivated to get off the couch and exercise? And a lot of people are afraid because they think, because it was always said that to be fit, you need to exercise 3 days a week for at least 30 minutes. And some people think that, you know, well, I can't do that. So they just don't do anything. They just, it's like that thing that they're like, oh, I gotta do that much. And we still kind of say that today. You know, if you really want to see change in your body, you do need to work out. I mean, I really believe 4 to 5 times a week, but it depends on your goal. I mean, are you trying to just have a good quality of life and have good health? Or are you trying to change your body and get drop body fat? Because, you know, it's all relative depending on the person that and what their goals are. But if you can find the balance between the weights and the cardio and the yoga and, you know, do it all. If you can, you know, kind of mix it all up, that's the best way to really, in my opinion, get results and have good fitness.
Well, and in this article, too, this is, again, very futuristic or visionary. They talk about the body-mind connection. And for me, I think that's one of the most important pieces of information for people to truly understand that maybe are a little hesitant to want to get on a, you know, regular exercise routine, is that the mental benefits, the calming benefits, the empowerment benefits of taking control of your own health just are amazing. We're going to talk more about it with you, Tina, after the break. We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back, you guys. Stay tuned. More coming up with Then and Now, workouts now versus workouts in the 1990s with Tina Burnett. You're listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis and Tina Burnett. Today we're talking about then and now, workouts now versus workouts in the 1990s with Tina Burnett. She is a wonderful trainer. She's one of the best in the country. She has a bachelor's of kinesiology. She is a certified strength and conditioning specialist. She is also certified in biomechanics, and she is part of the Aerobics and Fitness Association of America with over 30 years of teaching cardiovascular classes at several of Dallas's top studios and health clubs, as well as instructing and developing resistance training programs for individuals and groups in the gym and in the home. She is an amazing fitness instructor and has been named top female personal trainer in DFW by the Personal Trainers Hall of Fame. You can contact her at tbfitnesspro@gmail.com or on Instagram at tbfitnesspro. Right before the break, Tina, you and I were talking about the body-mind connection, and they also address this in this article that I found in my house from 1990. It is a cover of Self magazine from, as I said, January 1990. But the article that we're covering is The Future of Fitness is Now. And one of the things that one of the doctors in this article said, and I'm going to read this real quick, and we can you can elaborate. Catherine Halmy, MD, professor of psychiatry at New York Hospital Cornell Medical Center, Westchester, she was quoted as saying, fitness is intertwined with mental as well as physical health. It's very much a quality of life issue. I think that's really cool that she was talking about that 30 years ago before anybody was really talking about it. And they address it in this article.
Yeah, absolutely. And people that are mentally have problems, it kind of goes back and forth. There's people that have maybe have psychological or psychologically impaired, have some kind of mental issue. They tend to refrain from physical activity, whereas people that are physically impaired, it affects their mental state at the same time. So it's kind of like if you're physically impaired or unfit, your mental state is going to suffer, right? And so it's that sometimes it's people that are physically impaired that struggle with trying to start a workout program because they don't think that they can do workouts. So they talk a lot about just get moving, just be active. Being active is so important for health and fitness. Even if you're not getting in the gym and, you know, pumping those weights, if you can get started by just being active. I mean, it's like you, like I was saying about you, I mean, Bernadette, you're moving all day. You're cleaning, you're on your house. I mean, you're burning a lot of calories and that is helping your fitness. I mean, think that they make a big point of bringing that up. And then once you do start being active, you start feeling better mentally. And before you know it, you know, you start progressing into more of, you know, getting in the workouts. And they talk about that even if you did 10 minutes three times a day, rather than trying to do 30 minutes all at once, you're going to get a benefit from that. And that's still true today. It just depends on what you do, of course, but.
Well, and a lot of people still have the same attitudes of some of these people, you know, excuse me, I've got the same thing you've got in my throat, but the same attitudes then is now. Like there's one girl here that they show, and she's got a totally late 80s, 90s blazer on. As a matter of fact, she's already come back one time, maybe headed that way again, but it says, my version of weightlifting is grabbing my groceries and walking the 10 blocks home. I figure every little bit adds up. And of course, I bet she lives in New York City, which is probably where this was, you know, produced years ago. Most major magazines are, that's where they're produced. But an interesting thing, you know, just an interesting comment. And then another girl saying, exercise, who has time? When I get a minute to myself, I stroll over to the park and read. And then another one, climbing up and down the stairs is my regular work is my regular workout. I feel I get more exercise that way than an aerobics class. What do you say to these three people?
Well, I think that that's great. Again, it's kind of a personal preference thing. I mean, if you're happy with how you feel and how you look, with that being your exercise, then that's great. As long as you're, you know, you have a better quality of life, you have the ability to hopefully, you know, prevent yourself from getting sick more easily, strengthen your immune system. However, there is truth to the fact that actual working out and exercise is even more beneficial than just those kind of activities. I'm not dogging that, these women, but, you know, as we know now, if they are just happy with how they are, then that's great for them. But if you're really wanting to change your body and lose weight, I mean, there was somewhere in here where someone quoted that exercise isn't the way to lose weight. And I don't agree with that. We do know it's, you know, 85-90% diet or nutrition. I don't like to use the word diet. I like to use the word nutrition and what you're eating. But I do believe with the right nutrition plan and the right type of exercise, you know, if that's your goal, if your goal is I really want to lose body fat and change the shape of my body, you're not going to get it by just grabbing your groceries and walking 10 blocks. You do burn a lot of calories, you get results, but if you're not going to change, you know, your body shape. So again, if, you know, changing body composition and really, The only way to really add lean mass and decrease body fat is to do resistance training. And I mean, that's what research shows, you know?
Yeah. Well, and there's a couple of things that we found. I actually continue to look through it even more. When I got at home last night, legs pantyhose. Does anybody remember those? I can remember my dad having a legs pantyhose stand in his little grocery store. And the woman
came in little eggs.
Yeah, they did. And then the girls that used to refill the pantyhose display all were in like short shorts, you know. It's just kind of crazy how things have changed. I remember her coming into my dad's grocery store when I was a kid, and she was really cute. She had nice legs and her outfit was real bright, you know. I think it was purple at the time, but I mean there's full page ads in here for Newport Stripes cigarettes, and of course they're pretty. The packaging is pretty, which would make, you know, a girl want to pull out a pretty package of cigarettes instead of a manly package of cigarettes. Very interesting stuff here. And then, remember Spiegel? Spiegel
catalog.
Oh, my gosh. I'm like, oh, my gosh. There's actually a mailer in here to get your Spiegel catalog. Just funny stuff going back in time. But one of the things I want to talk about, what were you going to say? The what?
Well, the other article in there about crash dieting.
That's what I'm getting ready to to bring up. It's on the cover. It says the first safe crash diet, along with falling in love and being in love, know the difference, and how men use money to buy love, sex, and power. A lot of things haven't changed, right?
Well, no kidding. But what has changed is that article about the crash dieting. You know, I was reading. It's interesting. When I mentioned that back when I was at my heaviest, and it was about eating more of a high-carb, low-fat diet, and they state that they have like a 7-day safe crash diet, and it's the complete opposite of what we teach now. You know, now, you know, you got paleo, you got keto, you know, it's more about high protein, high fat, and low carb. And this is, breakfast is a half a cup of oatmeal with a half cup of low fat milk. Mid-morning is a box of raisins, which is like pure sugar. Lunch is a pita pocket with chicken and non-stick cooking spray, which is horrible for you, and seasoned with low-salt chicken broth powder, blah, blah, blah. And then it has, 1 tablespoon diet mayonnaise.
Right. There's a bunch of diet stuff in here, too.
Yeah.
And here's an interesting fact. It says 2 packets of aspartame diet sweetener.
Yes.
They didn't even have a name for it then. That was before they marketed it. But it's really bad for you just then and now. It is one of the worst things you could put in your body. So read your labels, because aspartame is not good for your body or your brain.
Back in that day, everything was diet. You know, they would take the fat out of things and add fake sugar or more sugar. So here we're putting down all these carbs with either aspartame or, you know, whatever, and not getting very much protein, where, you know, that's totally different now. I mean, you know, we have a lot of talk on your show about keto and all that, and this is like the polar opposite of what we're doing now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and of course, it's kind of funny. And some things will never change. So it says start with a doctor's exam, which I guess is prudent judgment, especially if you're very out of shape, you know, and you haven't exercised in a long time. You certainly don't want to do any crash dieting. But I don't think, you know, that's just a litigious thing. But it's really interesting, the pros and the cons. And one of the cons, and we know this, and this is one of the things that I think that people need to understand then and now about crash dieting. It lowers your metabolic rate and really is, as it's just like you said, Tina, and I took the notes, yo-yo dieting. Let's talk about that for a minute.
So if you cut your calories down super low, like under 1,000 calories, and of course it depends on the size of the person and everything. I mean, some men can lose weight eating 2,500 calories a day, depending on, you know, what their workout is. But if you cut it down to like even 800 calories a day, which a lot of those MediFast, remember the shake diets people go on, you're going to lose a bunch of weight. If you're not lifting weights, you're going to lose a bunch of muscle. And so you might become a smaller version of yourself, but you still are going to have, you know, the body fat and less muscle. But the problem is when you eat that way for however long the diet is, maybe it's 6 weeks or more. And as soon as you start adding in even maybe another 200 calories and then bump up to 1,000, you're going to start gaining weight very quickly. And so that's what happens with a crash diet, is you lose weight really fast, but your metabolism slows down. You've lost muscle mass. As soon as you go off the diet and you start kind of going back to your old habits, you're going to, most people, I mean, I think the it's like a 90% of the people that do crash diets end up gaining back all the weight and even more within, you know, a few months of going off the crash diet. And so then they go on another diet and they lose weight again. So they so said they call it the yo-yo dieting. You diet, you lose weight, and then you gain it back. And you diet, you lose weight, you gain it back. And it wreaks havoc on your metabolism. It really can mess you up for years where you get to a point where you can really never maintain a healthy weight because your metabolism's so messed up and you've lost a bunch of muscle with all your crash dieting.
Right. Well, and another thing I want to point out, and then we need to go to break, but in this article, the thing that stuck out to me is like low sodium, low sodium, low sodium. Well, of course, if you go on a real low sodium diet, you're going to lose a lot of water weight, not actual fat, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, it's very misleading and it's not good for you. The best advice I think that you and I both have for everyone out there listening is be consistent. Be consistent, you know, in getting your body up there and moving, and be consistent in your nutrition and try to eat at the best quality food that you can.
Yeah, it's about the quality of the food, not the quantity for most people, and making it a lifestyle. Don't go on a diet. It may take you longer to lose the weight you want, but if you're eating the right quality food, it's not as much about calories as it is about, you know, what type of food you're putting in your mouth. Proteins, healthy fats, low on the processed foods, if no processed foods are possible, and vegetables and some sweet potatoes and maybe some grain. Some people are doing no grain right now, but yeah, that's the key. And just doing it as a lifestyle and not stopping.
Right, and that includes buying food at the grocery store that's already prepared that you're taking home, like mashed potatoes or macaroni and cheese and stuff like that that's already pre-prepared. You know it's loaded with salt and not good quality ingredients. It just isn't. It's better to cook fresh in your own home always. And
Absolutely.
Then you don't have all the plastic going into the earth as well. So always great. Tina Burnett, thank you so much. You can find Tina at tbfitnesspro@gmail.com or on Instagram at tbfitnesspro. We'll talk to you tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow. I look forward to my workout.
Okay. Bye, Bernie.
Bye. Everyone, we've got a great show continuing on. Dr. Will Tuttle is back. He is the author of the number one Amazon best-selling book, The World Peace Diet. We're going to be talking about the World Peace Diet during worldwide unrest. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio.
And for someone else, but not for me. Our love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis and Dr. Will Tuttle. He is the author of the number one best-selling book, The World Peace Diet, as well as his most recent book, Your Inner Islands, The Keys to Intuitive Living. He is the editor of Circles of Compassion, Essays Connecting Issues of Justice, and newly released Buddhism and Veganism, Essays Connecting Spiritual Awakening and Animal Liberation. Dr. Tuttle is the recipient of both the Courage of Consciousness Award and the Empty Cages Prize. He is a former Zen monk and Dharma master in the Zen tradition. His PhD degree is from the University of California, Berkeley, where he focused on educating intuition and altruism in adults. He has taught college courses in creativity, humanities, religion, and philosophy, and is also a composer and concert pianist, and I have heard him play before, and he is unbelievably talented, just thrilling to listen to. You can find him at his website, worldpeacediet.com, that's worldpeacediet.com, or circleofcompassion.org, and also Will Tuttle. Tom, always a pleasure. Dr. Tuttle, how are you doing today?
Oh, thank you so much. I'm Bernadette. It's wonderful to be with you and be able to have this opportunity to share. Yes.
Yeah, well, it was so great having you on last week, and I just couldn't get you back soon enough, and especially with everything that's going on in the world right now, which is what we're talking about today. Our topic is the World Peace Diet during worldwide unrest. And so people all over the country are protesting the deaths of Black American Black American males at the hands of police officers. Most of the protesting is peaceful, but there has been, you know, some looting and confrontation with law enforcement. What do you think about all of the protesting, that even though it may result in violence, do you believe that it's something that's just necessary?
Well, of course, we as human beings and as Americans have the right to protest, and we have the right to assemble and to share our grievances, and of course. I do think that violence is not a good idea in the long run, and the sense of revenge also, I think, in the long run, it's like, you know, Mahatma Gandhi said very wisely, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind, you know, because it just tends to escalate and create more fear and more violence, and violence tends to build on itself. And so one of the main ideas, I think, in the World Peace Diet really is that we can question the narratives that are going on in our society that at the deep level that promote violence. And one of the main things, I think, is to see that when we look at other beings as objects in some way, don't see them as beings, don't look in their eyes and recognize them as having the same life that we have, then it's easy to, in a sense, cast them out of our heart or not care about them and harm them without feeling a sense of remorse. We do this a lot in our society, as you know, of course, with cows and pigs and chickens and other animals. This is something that we do by the billions every day. These animals, they're not killed in anger. It's just like we don't care. We just sort of do it. It's a, you know, big, huge assembly line kind of thing. But the underlying mentality, I think, is very similar. We don't recognize them as beings. And it's been really interesting for me as a Zen Buddhist monk to go to Korea, for example, where people eat dogs, you know, and it's considered quite okay to do that now and then.
Right.
You know, people have dog soup. And in this country, we would say, oh, that's absolutely unthinkable. How could we ever do it? And I've talked to Korean people who would say, well, you know, I mean, killing a cow, we would never kill a cow. I mean, that's a beautiful being. We would, it would be so terrible to do that. And people who have companion animals, a dog or a cat, of course, would protect that animal very often with their lives if they were, someone wanted to eat them. But I have friends also who have sanctuaries, and the cows and the pigs and chickens and other animals have names and personalities, and they're recognized as beings. Mm-hmm. So I think the underlying idea in all of this is for us to cultivate compassion in our hearts for everyone. And, of course, we have to air our grievances. We need to hold those who are committing violence to account. That's very important. But not allow just anger and hatred to run wild, because that just builds on itself and will create a world really for our children that's worse rather than better. So I think the most important thing is to look as deeply as we can and cultivate love and kindness in our hearts for others. We're all wounded, really. Everyone is wounded by being born.
Yeah.
We're all into this culture, you know. So I think that's a big point, is to try to cultivate compassion and realize that hitting back at people who have been harmed themselves, it creates more harm in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the old expression? Two wrongs don't make a right.
Exactly. You know, that's the thing. And there's been, for example, there's been studies done, not that we would ever, you know, condone this, but most of the people, for example, who commit sexual abuse on children, which is a terrible thing, were themselves as children sexually abused, right? So this happened to them, and then they were wounded, and then they tend to do that. So we don't want to, certainly don't condone it, but we have to have some understanding. We need to stop the behavior that causes the violence. Like Gandhi said also, he said, we have a right to hate or dislike the behavior, but not the person, not the being. We try to look beyond that and realize that at a deeper level, we're all interconnected. We're all expressions of life. And we all have, I think, personally, a germ of light and love and beauty inside of us.
Absolutely. I agree. And, yeah. You know, it's funny. We were talking about then and now with the earlier segment with my dear friend Tina Burnett, and the year was 1990. And I just, you know, Googled what are some top stories from 1990? And, well, there's some really interesting ones that I think are relevant here, that South Africa frees Nelson Mandela, who was imprisoned up to imprisoned 27 and a half years. That was on February 11th of 1990. And then Communist Party relinquished sole power in the Soviet government. Yugoslav communist and 45-year monopoly of power, and East and West Germany reunited. And those are beautiful things, you know, and it's about the world working together as one, right? And that's why I just love, you know, speaking with you, because you emulate and see the vision of the whole picture, the whole world peace diet. You know, not American peace diet, not African peace diet, but the world peace diet. And so I'm going to ask you this. Can the principles of the world peace diet help us understand and address this current situation that we find ourselves in?
Yes, that's a great question. And that's the underlying key, I think, to everything. The underlying principles in the world peace diet really are this. It's the spirit. We use this word vegan, which I think a better word in a way is ahimsa, which is an ancient Sanskrit word that means non-harmfulness or non-violence. Mm-hmm. And the idea is really to practice in our own lives as individuals, looking at others with eyes of loving kindness and understanding. And we can do that anytime. We can be driving our car and look over at somebody in the lane next to us, and instead of just seeing a Buick or a Toyota, see the being in there and send them a little bit of love. You know, we can all do that.
Yeah.
We can send people, we can be walking through the airport or walking down the street or in the line in the post office, and we see all these people standing there. Just send them. You don't know them. You don't know what weight is on their shoulders, what tragedy perhaps happened to them, you know, a few days ago or whatever. But we're all in this together in a very deep level, and we can send loving kindness and support to other people. And I think when we do that, we create within our own heart a feeling of gratitude, really, for this life.
Absolutely.
And a sense of loving kindness that we're grateful for our life. And I think the other thing is to really try to extend this beyond the in-group. Like we identify with a certain appearance, like I'm a whatever sex I am, whatever race I am, whatever nationality I am, to keep broadening it more and more, whatever species I am, to broaden it so that it's a radical inclusion. We include all beings within the sphere of our kindness and compassion, not just the particular ones we identify with. There's always going to be war if we identify only with those who look like us, because that's materialism. That's basically saying I'm just an object that was born and will die. I'm just a thing. This piece of meat. This thing. But we're not. We're each one of us. I think we know this at a very deep level. Is actually a manifestation of eternal and infinite awareness of consciousness that was not born and will not die. And this is the thing I think that we're awakening to now in the world today, is to see beyond just the material, physical, outer shell and see the being, see the awareness, and see it shining in the hearts and in the minds and in the eyes of other human beings and in other animals, too, and to respect that. Absolutely. We naturally respect it when we see it, but we're trained not to see it in ourselves, even. We're trained in many ways to see ourselves as I have to compete against others to make enough money. You know, we're kind of all thrown in many ways into a difficult situation. So, and it's even more difficult, of course, with the pandemic. You know, tensions are up, people are stressed out because of financial pressures and so forth. So we should have even more patience and understanding and loving kindness for each other during this challenging time, and
Absolutely.
Not allow our frustrations to just run wild, because it'll just build. We know that violence begets more violence, and love begets more love.
And we're going to have to go to break, so I have to interrupt you, and I apologize. Okay. I was trying to find a good spot because we're on a roll here. But I wanted to just tell this real quick, too. The other day, I went to Petco to get some cat litter, and there was a black girl outside and getting into her car, and I looked at her and genuinely asked her, are you doing okay, you know? And she smiled so big. She said, yeah. And those are the kind of things. And then earlier in the day yesterday, I was driving down the street, and there was a couple of black guys driving down the street, and I waved at both of them, you know, and they waved back.
Yes.
And those are the kind of things that we need to do to let our fellow brothers and sisters know that, hey, I'm with you. I'm with you in this. We're all one. And it doesn't take very much to send that message. And if you love your brothers and your sisters, you need to start doing stuff like that and try to ease the tensions and the fears that everybody is feeling. And as you said, it's contagious too, because love just begets more love and violence just begets more violence. So we're going to go to break. Right. We'll come right back. More coming up with Dr. Will Tuttle. I love this man. I can't wait to come back. You're going to have to just come back every week. I can't get enough of this. But we'll be right back, everyone, after station identification. You're listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and we have Dr. Will Tuttle with us. Continuing on, we're talking about the World Peace Diet during worldwide unrest. You can find Dr. Tuttle at worldpeacediet.com, circleofcompassion.org, and willtuttle.com. Okay, so I don't want to waste a minute here. This is such incredibly good content today, Dr. Tuttle, and I appreciate you jumping on the air with us. What this message is so important. We all need to hear it right now. So what do you recommend we do to end racism and inequality, not just in the U.S., but worldwide?
Well, thank you so much, Bernadette. You know, I wrote I edited a book called Circles of Compassion, Essays Connecting Issues of Justice. And basically, the underlying idea is that our routine abuse of animals for food and for other products and entertainment and so forth creates an underlying template in our society of seeing other living beings as mere material objects to be used as instruments to really get whatever we want. It's a slavery of animals, the ownership of them, impregnating them against their will, stealing their babies, breaking their families, and doing this for about 10,000 years. I go into the whole history of this, that 10,000 years ago when we started doing this in what is today Iraq, for the first time, and we see how from that time we've created a society of war and of slavery and of the domination and exploitation of others of and the domination of the sacred feminine principle. And so I think really one thing we can all do is to just eat higher on the lower on the food chain, you know, raise our compassion higher and try to eat a more plant-based diet, especially a healthy organic plant-based diet. One of the other things we know now through science is that people who do not have a healthy diet with plenty of fresh greens and grains and vegetables and fruits and nuts and seeds, it's hard to get really adequate nutrition. Plus, there's a lot of toxins in those foods, which lead to a lot of the diseases that we're seeing happening and makes us vulnerable to disease. It reduces our immune system. And also what researchers have discovered is that when people don't get enough, especially of B vitamins, they can suffer from pellagra, which is a disease that causes a rash and also causes people to be very easily angered and frustrated and violent. And the word redneck actually comes from people in the American South back in the 1910s, 20s, and 30s. Who are eating very poor diets and that were very low, you know, a lot of meat and not enough fresh vegetables. And they would get pellagra, and it was undiagnosed. Doctors didn't know about it. And so they would get very angry very easily. They would, you know, so this whole idea that our food is very important, eating a healthy, balanced diet is not only good for our physical health, it's good for our mental and emotional health. And that translates into it being good for our social health. We have people who are much less likely to be angry and violent and to be suicidal or to be homicidal or to be frustrated. It's really important, I think, that we understand the power of food and understand also the deep level of the symbolism of our food, that when we lock up millions of animals, you know, and we do it, if we pay for meat, dairy products, and eggs, we cause them enormous suffering. And that suffering doesn't just dissolve, it boomerangs. You know, every world religion teaches the teaching, as you sow, so shall you reap. We can't expect that we can have a world of peace and harmony and freedom and justice for ourselves while we're sowing the seeds of terror and fear and pain and slavery and injustice in the lives of millions of other beings whose interests are as important to them as my interests are to me. This is the underlying, this is the inescapable dilemma that we're in. And that's why I think we're all called to try to look as deeply as we can and give love and freedom, especially to those who are vulnerable, to animals, to future generations, to children, to people with less money, people who are more, you know, who are more vulnerable, to try to think of them and not be not oppress other beings, you know, in everything we do, in our purchases, in our actions, you know, as much as we can help others. That's the key thing underlying everything.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I love what you're saying today. I do. I think it's so incredibly necessary. I'm not even going to get to all my questions, and that's okay because that means I get to have you back sooner rather than later. But, you know, when...
Yeah, I know, there's so much to talk about.
No, there is. And a lot of the work, you know, earlier you were talking about friends that have, you know, like basically animal sanctuaries. And I thought of like Gene Bauer, he's been on the show, or Gene Stone, who's good friends. And David Newkirk is on the show next week. I'm sure the two of you know one another, or you're probably good friends. But I love Ingrid. She's an incredible woman. She, you talk about a leader. You talk about a world leader. Oh, my gosh. That woman's at the top of my list. And what she has to say isn't that popular, but it doesn't matter because courage isn't about that. Courage is about getting the message out to people and trying to get them to listen and understand that cruelty is never a good thing. But I'm looking at my clock here. I think I have time to ask you. I've got like 30 seconds once I ask the question. But the Unitarian Church where I met you and we watched the film. What was the name of the film that we watched?
Oh, A Prayer for Compassion.
A Prayer for Compassion. Someone in the audience asked you, what would Jesus eat? You got 30 seconds. What would Jesus eat if he were...
Well, I think today, for sure, and I actually think there's a lot of evidence that shows that even back then, he ate a whole food, I mean, a plant-based diet. Of course, it was whole food. There weren't any factories back then.
Yeah,
but grains, nuts, and seeds, bread.
Well, we've got a lot more to talk about. I just can't wait to have you back. So get out there and have a great day. You know, you get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there and be positively contagious.